It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
Montaigne stepped down as co-host of Morning Edition last fall, serving in that role for 12 years. She worked out of the NPR West studio in California and says it was her decision to change her role.
You know, I went to bed every day at 3 p.m. and I got up at 11 p.m. and I worked approximately till 11 the next morning. It's a funny thing about the overnight. You know, it isn't like when you could leave at 9 a.m., but besides the work that needs to be done, everyone's arriving at 9 a.m. So there's a sort of a psychology of sticking it out a little longer every day. So, you know, at a point, yes, I definitely it wasn't a quick decision. It was about a year and a half before I actually stepped down that I started talking to NPR's management about shrinking down those hours somehow, or, you know, making a change of some sort, even though I loved every minute of it. And so, you know, I wanted to shrink the hours down, and then the feeling over time, and it was over some time, I think it was surprising to people, but it was not a surprise to me, was, well, if we're going to do it, let's just do it. You know, let's like let a new generation or new voices get their shot and, you know, try and figure out a different, you know, path. So we have, and one of the first things I've done is to sort of stepped off into something that for molecule is different, I have to say, than getting up and doing that show. By the way, a very exciting but also very super high-pressure time.
When you started Morning Edition, though, you actually replaced longtime host Bob Edwards. Was that difficult?
It was tough because those who were listening then will know very well that Bob was the voice of the show. And his departure turned out to be a complicated one, and he wasn't very happy. And it wasn't comfortable all around. So in that respect, it was very tough. You know, we were not hired officially for our 8 months, Steve and I. We came in as the two to try and change the show because you could never do another Bob show. You know, they didn't try and recreate Bob. You know, the whole point was to have two hosts, to have two co-hosts, to have hosts who'd been out in the field for such a long time that we brought with us specialties. In my case, Afghanistan. I'd spent a couple of trips to Afghanistan and continued as I hosted.
Why did you decide to get into radio and journalism? Did journalism bring you into radio? How did that work for you?
No, you know what brought me into radio? I was at University of California, Berkeley, my last year, and my closest friends, as it turned out, were not fellow students. They were poets and performers and some musicians, but most of my best, closest girlfriends were writers. And in fact, writers who were getting known, and they were 21 years old. It was also a San Francisco moment. We were talking about early 1970s, 1974-ish, I think it was about then. And there was a little radio station, KPOO, in San Francisco, Poor People's Radio, that's what it stood for. Mm. Not in the system at all, nowhere near, not even in the Pacifica system. I mean, we were so funky. And probably more people in that building than were able to listen, because with all the hills and whatnot, we didn't reach very many areas. But you could do anything you wanted. It felt like a theater and our own playground. And because I wasn't a poet, it's as simple as that, we were looking around for what I could do, and my natural instincts were, why don't I do a show about women? And not very originally, I called it Women's Voices. And then they made me head of the news department, which was precisely me, the news department. And I didn't get paid, or we finally got, I don't know, $85 at some point, some grand. But I didn't get paid. I worked as a waitress to do that for a couple of years. And by the end of it, I'd fallen in love with radio and with being a journalist of sorts.
Talk about your travels to Afghanistan. Not only as a journalist, but as a female, the folks that you've spoken to in that country and that personal experience that you've had.
Well, Afghanistan for me was a revelation. I have been in difficult circumstances before, as I think people might know. I arrived in South Africa the day Nelson Mandela was released. I completed my general work there the day he was inaugurated, an amazing moment in history, and lived through that arc of that world. There was a township war going on, and it was very dangerous to go into townships, and I did on my own, quietly. I'm small, so, you know, I'm a woman, never feared, oddly. But people were hurt, and journalists were hurt, and foreign journalists were hurt. And several photographers were killed over that small period of time during the elections, especially in 94. So I didn't I knew conflict. And when I first went to Afghanistan in 2002, there was very little conflict. As you might remember, this was early 2002, but it was within 3 or 4 months of the Taliban being driven out. It was considered the war was over. It was peaceful. And so I learned about that country initially as a peaceful, welcoming, amazing, but also destroyed place. And I have to say about Afghans, they are some of the wittiest people. They are straightforward. They are the women, when you get past the burqa, are strong and interesting and can be very funny. And it is one of the more vibrant cultures. Everyone's different, of course, but if you can speak of a larger culture that I've ever experienced. And I've been in a lot of places in the world. And so I sort of fell in love almost immediately with the country, much as I had fallen in love with South Africa. So that was the beginning of many, many trips and also living out a different arc, an arc that has led increasingly to breakdown and ruin, which I hope Afghanistan will escape and think it will. But I still have a huge attachment and keep tabs and have very close friends in Afghanistan.
Renee, what are some of your most memorable interviews? You've certainly had a chance to talk with so many celebrities, someone like Mel Brooks and all, as you mentioned, the famous newsmakers on the serious side.
So much fun. I hate to say this, but I don't really have a favorite. I do say I have some favorite outcomes, if you want to say, Mel Brooks being one of them. He just was so funny, but it was also produced so beautifully by our producer here who popped it in. You know, we make things sound good. And in this case, Mel Brooks was a lovely interview. But by the time it was done with the music popping up here and there and with the bits, the sound, the accompanying movie bits and shaped, Barry Gordimer is his name. He's a really producer extraordinaire. It was a 7 minutes of pure laughter. Mel Brooks is a comedian who makes the unthinkable very, very funny, like a musical about Nazis. Along the way, Mel Brooks made a lot of people laugh and cringe at the same time.
I'm just vulgar, really, but I'm very proud of having bad taste.
Generally, I think the interviews that I loved were not people who you would know, generally speaking. They were people in South Africa, the ones I remember. They were, well, Nelson Mandela, I didn't really ever interview him, but he was always around. You would talk to him. I got him on tape, or it'd be like three of us in the room, that sort of thing. So he was wonderful. And I know he's angel-like, but he was the person that he's supposed to have been. You know, he's this amazingly charming guy. But mostly I would say the interviews I care about are the interviews that I do out in the field. But if I think of, Joni Mitchell was pretty cool. She came in at midnight. We couldn't book her because she didn't want to come in on my hours, which are obviously always in the morning. And finally they were explaining I come to work at midnight. And so her rep said, well, why don't you have her come in at midnight? And this is a feature, mind you. We're not talking live news here. And she showed up at midnight, and the two of us talked for an hour. And then I went and did the show, and the piece ran, a week later. But it was a midnight conversation with Joni Mitchell. And she was very open, and that is obviously her time. That is clearly when you want to talk to her.
You're working right now, I believe, on a series piece about women dying in childbirth.
I am. This is a piece, and this is sort of interesting to people. I don't know if people know, but the NPR, the Investigations Unit, pairs with other groups occasionally, and I am paired in this piece with ProPublica, which is a very respectable, enormously credible investigative organization. And yes, the story, the very short version is this. America, amazingly, has the highest— mortality rate in childbirth of all comparable nations. And so by comparison to Britain, it's a couple, three times higher, the death rate. Then France, European countries, Japan, it's surprising because it's America, and it's surprising in another way, and it's because it's not strictly about problems with prenatal care or the inability to get treatment or obesity or young mothers. It's not just that. It's just a range of women, and it's a range of diseases. So what we're trying to get at with this is, why is it happening? Why is it twice what it should be, at least? And what to do about it, and what to do about the tens of thousands of women who almost die but who suffer greatly. Most of them, or many of them rather, the CDC would say, unnecessarily. So it's an investigative story. It'll be several stories. It's not just one. And we're trying to find out information that is actually out there in some ways but hasn't been collected or actually is not out there. The stories will be coming out maybe late March, early April. They haven't been scheduled yet.
You have certainly embraced social media as a big part of your daily news coverage. You have 25,000 followers on Twitter, which is fantastic. Was it difficult to accept the new mediums in our industry? Because we've certainly transitioned, you know, you and I can go back to splicing actual physical tape.
With a razor.
Yes.
Well, I was not, in fact, I'm the worst. I am absolutely the worst person. I did not adopt social media. I, in fact, just got on Facebook. I mean, NPR assigned me a lot of stuff 7, 8, 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, Facebook, not assigned me, but we got me on, partly just to get Montaigne NPR. But it wasn't until 2 years ago that Steve Inskeep, we're sitting doing the show, and he said, he, by the way, has bazillions of followers and earned them all. But he has been doing it since day one, 7 or 8 years, however long it's been existed. And he said, well, you got to get on. You got to start doing Twitter. You really have to. You'll love it if only you do it. And everyone who's older, and you don't have to be that much older, who's looked at Twitter, it looks like gibberish in some ways. Not everything, but how you do it, right? Mm-hmm. He just insisted. And he said, I'm going to make you tweet one thing a day for the next 30 days. I was here for a month, and we were sitting side by side in D.C. And he walked me through every single thing of it on a daily basis. It was quite sweet. And I then fell in love with it. So I got my 25,000 in just the last 2 years, which is better than if I'd been on it the whole time.
Renee Montaigne, we look forward to seeing you right here in Buffalo on March 29th.
I look forward to it enormously. Thank you. And it's been a pleasure, Eileen.